Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Goodnight Sweetcast. I'm Philip Sharman. This is Chris Wallace.
Hello.
And I am in the mood. I'm in the mood because that is the title of the final episode of the first series of Goodnight Sweetheart. This podcast is all about the BBC sitcom Goodnight Sweethearts, where we're going through in a completely unofficial capacity. So I wonder if we make that clear enough that we have no affiliation with the actual TV show whatsoever.
I think people might think that we maybe help in some way, or we could play a part. I haven't directed any of these episodes, so I'm not a character in them.
We get some misunderstanding from people. We do get the occasional tweet. So when are you coming back then? Are we getting another series?
Next week!
We don't know. We have no sway whatsoever. Yeah, we've got no idea.
Nah, no one tells us anything.
If you do want to in some way influence the possibility of a return of Goodnight Sweetheart, then you can visit goodnight-sweetheart.net, where there's a whole wealth of Goodnight Sweetheart information, including a petition, an online petition you can sign to give your voice to the cries for more episodes. If that's what you want, maybe you don't want that.
Maybe you hate it.
Maybe you hate everything about
and you're listening to this as some sort of punishment to yourself, like that guy in the Da Vinci Code. No, no reference. Someone knows. That was good.
Maybe you're listening to this full of bile and hatred in the same way as I'll sometimes read the comments on Daily Mail articles.
Exactly. That's what this is to someone.
Oh, what do they even like Goodnight Sweetheart for? The bloody idiots.
Get themselves in a rage.
Oh, I hate everything about you. Podcasters, they're the worst.
Yeah, we are.
They're so self-absorbed. Why would they think anybody would want to even listen to their voices? What can I say? You're absolutely right. And if we're helping you to vent your spleen, then that's a service we're happy to offer.
Gladly.
We've had some more contributions to the Garrulery.
Garrulery.
The Garrulery, for which we are very, very grateful.
What's in the bag? That's what they say, innit? On like radio and stuff. What's in your bag, Phil? Your bag. Your post bag.
The Garrulery is for all forms of creative expression.
Everything.
We've had poems. We've had drawings. Mm-hmm. We have now had our first piece of Goodnight Sweetheart themed cross stitch.
It's really good.
It's incredibly good.
It's from Keith Clark.
Friend of the show, Keith Clark.
And he's very talented.
He's ignored our comment last week to spend around about the half hour mark on any contributions to the Garrulery. And he spent God knows how long doing a photorealistic cross stitch.
So good.
So good. Of Nicholas Lyndhurst in Gary Sparrow get-up. And we are phenomenally grateful for that beautiful piece of artwork. We've had another couple of contributions, also graphic.
So, do you mean filthy?
I don't mean filthy.
Keep waiting for the erotic fanfiction to come in. It's just not happening.
I'm not backing you up on that, though. I'm not sure I want any dirty contributions to the Garrulery.
Art.
The kind of thing you've got in mind is very much not art. Filth. You may remember Pipe Weasel from last week's episode.
How could I forget?
Still no closer to knowing what the handle Pipe Weasel means. Mm. Maybe that's his given name. Born to Mr. and Mrs. Weasel. All throughout the pregnancy, Mr. and Mrs. Weasel have been struggling with what to call their child. Mm. But then in the delivery room, as they held him in his arms, they just knew. They just knew, we shall call you Pipe. They'd got themselves a long, thin baby.
Yeah, it's called Pipe.
Hollow on the inside. They could have gone with Rod, which, you know, is actually a first name.
Yeah, but they're a bit quirky, those weasels.
Pipe Weasel sent us another picture. In his own words, I perfected my Gary Sparrow cartoon.
And he has?
I can't argue with him. He has correctly assessed his skills there. What he's actually said is that he's going to bother us until we can stand him no more.
All right, then. Pipe Weasel, do me a Phoebe.
We haven't had a Phoebe
yet. We
had no
Phoebe artwork, and I'd like some Phoebe artwork. Your task has been set, Pipe.
Somebody else pointed out the similarity between the outfit that Gary Sparrow wears when in 1940 and the outfit of choice of Doctor Who in the David Tennant years.
And they also are both time travellers. Nicholas and Tess could have been a Doctor Who. That could have been a whole thing.
Whenever there's a new Doctor Who, there's always lots of names bandied around.
Is he one of the list?
Lyndhurst never really makes sense.
Really?
Likewise, whenever they're positing who might be the next Bond. So we've got a 1940s Lyndhurst, and given that it is a simple pen drawing, the facial similarity is
very good,
isn't it? So well done for that. Thank you, Weasel Pipe. Thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Weasel. His name isn't Pipe Weasel, it's Weasel Pipe. I got it wrong.
Mr. and Mrs. Pipe is fine, so they decided to call him Weasel. He came out like a weasel.
Oh.
That's not good.
Next up, We've had another contribution for the Garrulery.
Is this the watercolour?
It's been done electronically, hasn't it? That's been done on paint or something, like maybe with a watercolour brush. Absolutely excellent. We've got a sheepish Gary Sparrow here.
You can see the pheromones leaking from his eyes.
Lee Ball is responsible for this. Here we go, he says. A hobbit slash Vulcan-like Gary Sparrow. Couldn't be closer to the truth. We've got a Gary Sparrow who looks both like a hobbit and a Vulcan. Excellent eyebrow work. Very blonder than Gary Sparrow actually is in real life. There's something menacing in the eyes, isn't there? The contemplative, always searching for an angle. That's what he's captured very well there. Gary Sparrow's eyes.
Also the hint of sadness.
Never quite satisfied as he goes gently mad. You, of course, can also submit to the Garrulery, and we urge you to do so by sending us your artwork. You can get in touch with us on the Twitter or goodnightsweetcast.com, where you'll find all our contact details there, or in the post. Send us some actual physical, honest-to-goodness post to Wikishuffle HQ, 1B Headlands, Kettering, NN157ER.
Or just in the street. If you see me, pass me your artwork.
Should we talk about episode 6?
Yes.
Unlike most episodes, we open in 1940, and we're in the Royal Oak. Phoebe is shouting down into the cellar to her dad, telling him to make his own dinner. Because she's been shopping and all she can pick up is some spuds and kale. Personally, I quite like a bit of kale.
Of course you do.
Maybe the 1940s would have been for me.
Yes. Yes, they would. How has this gone unnoticed to you? That's where you belong.
Well, the colour schemes were just nicer.
Yeah. Explains a lot, and I'm surprised you've only just reached these conclusions.
It's a royalist episode all round. God save the king is the motif that we're working with this week. Everyone in the pub is very excited to learn, via Reg, somehow Reg has become privy to this knowledge, that the king and queen are coming to the East End.
And they're all over the moon. It's as if they find out that Danny dies in the local nightclub. That's the equivalent now.
It's good that we can draw these parallels just so that the people of today can put themselves in the correct mindset to see how they should react. Danny dies coming to your nightclub. It's the same thing. Eric, in particular, is so offended at Gary's indifference towards this news, this exciting news that the King and Queen are coming to town, that he bars Gary from the pub.
Well, to be honest with you, he should have been barred a long time ago.
It's a culmination of other factors, isn't it? It's just the straw that breaks the camel's back, really.
I've been in a few pubs before in my time, and normally a reason a lot of people get barred is because they get too annoying with barmaids. That's not to say I've been barred for being annoying at barmaids. That's never happened to me.
What have we got to say about this episode generally? It nips along compared to last week.
Very short scenes.
If you remember, we criticised the dragginess of some of the scenes last week and felt that it didn't really get to where it was going. This week cracks along at a much better pace. You feel like stuff's happening. It feels like an end of series episode, as indeed it should and is. It's not normally our way to give spoilers, but I think it's worth saying that this episode is Phoebe's dad Eric's final appearance in Goodnight Sweetheart.
Yeah.
It's been established by the writer's commentary on the DVD and by our feelings as the episodes have gone on that he's a bit of a one-trick pony. He's not really got enough to offer, and you can see why his days might be numbered. That said, David Ryle does a great job.
I'll tell you where the younger generation are. They've taken the king's shilling.
Ah, and what's the king going to do when his gas goes out?
Arrest him, Reg. He's a spy. Stands to reason.
Oh, don't be silly, Dad.
Read that, Fritzy.
Four and threepence, fourpence, fivepence, three farthings. I took for the beer.
Yeah, I thought you might.
Oi, oi, not so fast. I'm saving that for when the Tommies march into Berlin.
Oh, Dad.
It's my pub. I'll do as I flaming well like.
Dad. Dad! Dad. Dad.
I hope you're not a spiv on the quiet.
Dad.
I'd have minded if your mum had gone dancing when I was up to me neck in muck and bullets.
She did, though.
What? I'm as patriotic as the next man. But 3 months for showing too bright a light on your push bike is a bit steep. And what are we going to do for a district nurse till she gets out?
Don't know what he's always doing around these parts, mate.
He's sniffing round my Phoebe, that's what. He just wants to get you a reputation.
No, look, in 20 minutes, all hell's going to break loose here.
He may get you to believe all this mumbo-jumbo, but I wasn't born yesterday, all right?
Dad!
All right, go. Go, then, if you want to. You better just pray your husband doesn't get to hear about it. Away fighting for his king and country.
Afternoon, Eric.
Oh, God help us, here comes trouble. Don't you come in here and ask for all that Yankee muck. I haven't seen a pickled egg since the fall of France. I don't need you to buy me drinks. You've driven me to drink. I'll have a large scotch. What, by turning my Phoebe's head? With your fancy ways, your stories about America, your romantic songs, bringing her bananas and chocolate and promises of a better life after the war. We don't need your handouts.
Oh, well, I'm glad you told me that, because I bought you some cigarettes and I'd hate to make a fool of myself.
No, no. She's gone to stay with the wife's sister, and if you think I'm going to give you the address, you've got another thing coming.
Bar of chocolate?
She's at 37 Livingston Crescent. You've got a few bob to win on yourself, haven't you? Snake in the grass. All right, girl. Stop mooning at him and get back down the pub.
Dad!
Well, you got a devious way with you, I must say. She was beside herself when she found out you was married, you two-timing gigolo. Tommy rot. You wait till it's foggy and the traffic's all creeping about at 5 miles an hour, then you walk in front of an ambulance. She's my only daughter. I'm a pub landlord of many years' standing, good reputation, fine line of business. You worm your way into her affections, poison her mind against her lawfully wedded spouse. Phoebe, I thought I forbade you ever to see him again.
Oh, don't start all that again, Dad.
I will start all that again, Dad. You are cheapening yourself with a married man, a real man, not some pansy who writes love songs and pretends to be a spy.
Dad!
Phoebe, nip down the cellar and fetch that bottle of brandy. We might as well finish it off.
David Ryle was born on January the 5th, 1935, in Shoreham-by-Sea, West Sussex, England, as David John Ryle. He died in 2014 on Christmas Day.
Oh.
Oh, that's sad, isn't it? That always seems very sad, people dying on Christmas Day. Pretending that this is research when it's not, I'm just reading the trivia section from IMDb. He's played British Prime Minister Winston Churchill in 3 unrelated productions.
He does, he looks...
You can see he's got something a bit jowly going on. Mm. He was the 16th Harry Potter film series cast member to die. That's a specific little fact, isn't it?
Mm.
Somebody out there... has got a list of everybody that was in Harry Potter and is ticking them off one by one. That seems like a lot of people to have died since the beginning of Harry Potter.
I know who he was in Harry Potter. He's a wizard.
Great.
And a friend of Dumbledore.
He was a theatre actor predominantly. He began with the National Theatre in 1965 and stayed for 8 seasons and joined the Royal Shakespeare Company in the late 1990s. He was posthumously in an episode of Call the Midwife in 2015. Oh, he was the granddad in Outnumbered for 8 episodes. So he got plenty of work right up until the end. So good work.
We will be missed on the show because now Phoebe's got no reason to say the thing I like anymore.
More importantly, you're not going to get to do it anymore.
I'll still get to do the accent, but...
Specifically, do you want to give it a go?
Yeah. Okay. This will be the best one. Oh, Dad!
Do another couple in case that wasn't the very best.
Oh, Dad!
She gets older with every impersonation you do.
Oh, Dad!
Oh, Dad!
She just drains it out of her. Oh, Dad! Oh, Dad!
Back now to 1993.
Back we go.
And in last week's episode, we thought that Yvonne, she wasn't really that annoyed after the whole Lithuania incident.
No, she didn't seem to be.
I think we can refer to it as the Lithuania incident, can't we?
So. That's chapter.
All was good, so we thought.
It wasn't though, was it?
It was simmering underneath.
Because she'd realised how much money Gary had been spending on war stuff. And so she went to do a shopping, got a card's declined. She said she was wandering around the supermarket for an hour. I don't know how that's relevant to not being able to pay for stuff. That's just bad shopping. She was so annoyed, she stopped ironing that oven mitt.
Sorry, the what?
Oven mitt.
The oven mitt.
Yes.
Okay. She was making a point in that she was doing the ironing. Mm-hmm. She wasn't ironing any of Gary's shirts.
No.
She'd kind of made the ironing stretch out so that she was still doing it. Because it's a lot easier to be in a huff when you're sulking, to doing a big sulk. If you look as though you're making yourself busy and the person that you're sulking at isn't busy, then you are correct in your indignation. And you win the first points. Look at me. I'm working my fingers to the bone, ironing this oven mitt.
It's not going
to
iron itself. That's what people say, isn't it?
It was a really stupid oven mitt as well. It was like some kind of CBeebies character.
No one's going to take it seriously when she's taking stuff out of the oven with that.
In Bake Off.
She would love Bake Off. I reckon if I worked in an office with Yvonne, we'd have Bake Off chat every Thursday.
You just love Bake Off chat.
Yeah, but I'd have it with Yvonne. I'm not going to have Bake Off chat with you, Emma.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about
it. I know
Bake
you don't.
I've seen one episode in my life.
No, that's your...
Quite enjoyed it. It was all right.
Well, if you did enjoy it, you'd go back. You'd be hooked.
passive-aggressive ironing is happening. There's no dinner because she couldn't use the credit card. But, I mean, it's very obvious, very immediately obvious that she's upset. Gary being Gary and knowing what he's been up to, he should maybe anticipate some upsettedness, perhaps. But instead, he's just really sarcastic about it. Oh, I think that something might be bothering you. That's just antagonistic, isn't it? You know, that's not an apology. That's a...
He doesn't apologise.
My mistake. Which gets a laugh from the audience because they're not nice people in the audience, I think. They love it when family photo albums get stolen. Mean people. She's got the credit card bill that she presents. She's got two pages.
Yep, in her back pockets.
One page in either back pocket.
As you do, as was the custom.
Her dress is quite subdued. As much as we said that we're not just going to point out Yvonne's clothing.
Reflects her mood. Simmering rage.
Passive-aggressively dressed.
Yep.
The worst part about not being able to pay for the shopping, of course, was who was bloody there.
Oh, what was her name? Linda?
Linda Ferguson. And Linda Ferguson from up the road with the Integral Garage.
Exactly, because you know what she's like.
She says something about an affair. She says something along the lines of, if I didn't know you better, I would think you're having an affair. She could do with knowing him better.
Yeah, probably.
Because he is.
He most definitely is.
Mm. This is something that the show does again and again, is it keeps refusing to refer to it as an affair. It keeps pretending that there isn't really any infidelity going on.
But there is now.
There definitely is. They had a snog. Yeah. That counts as infidelity. Mm. I would say even before they had the hospital snog, infidelity had already occurred.
Because it has been suggested, at least.
The infidelity isn't in the action, it's in the intent. So the reason that he's mounted up all of these credit card debts is that he's bought all of this 1940s stuff. And so Yvonne gives him an ultimatum. It's the stuff or me. Get rid of the stuff or I'm leaving. So that's quite a line in the sand.
Yeah. Well, to her, it's obviously, it should be quite an easy thing to do because to her, it's just...
a load of old tat.
But to Gary and to the audience, that's not just old stuff. That's...
meaningful.
Meaningful Gary Plop.
Gary Plop.
Gary Plop. You can call it Gary Plop. Gary's 40s Plop.
And he takes this on board. He goes off to Ron and I've got this stuff to get rid of, this 1940s stuff. What am I going to do with this? I'll see if Ron wants to buy it. Ron's never expressed any interest. There is a throwaway comment, as much as some of the comments have been dated and some of the references to getting your leg over has been a bit near the knuckle and a bit odd and dated
fine.
Now,
yeah.
But fine. In this episode, there is something that would never, ever make it past the edit in 2016. And that is, Ron puts forward that Yvonne might be a little bit cranky because it's her time of the month.
Which I feel, I seem to remember, that was a big joke for a long time.
Uh-huh. And yet now it jarred so strong because that's not okay.
No.
That's not a way to deconstruct a woman's reasoning. That's rude.
As we've learned from this series, Ron hasn't been fully fleshed out yet. That's to come. He's still a bit hit and miss throughout this series. We're getting an idea of it, but I think going forward we'll probably get to know a better Ron.
In the conversation with Gary, where Gary's doubting whether not to go back, Ron dresses this up as being every man's dream of having an untraceable bit on the side. You're a man.
Yes, I am.
I am also a man.
Mm-hmm.
Can I go on the record and say, and this isn't just me being PC, this isn't just me being right on and being, I'm such a great liberal man. I can't think of anything in the world that I would less want to have to juggle
stressful
than a bit on the side. The idea is personally offensive to me. The suggestion that every man is just thinking, oh, what I'd really like is to be shagging two women. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I want. I've got this relationship that I don't really care about, but she irons my shirts. But what I really want is to be having it away with the barmaid. No, not absolutely. And on a fundamental logistical level, I do not want that in my life.
No, me neither.
And that's setting aside the hurt that I know that it would cause my loved one, or the feeling of self-interest in, I wouldn't want it to happen to me, or what if I get caught? Aside of all of that, just the logistics of it.
Yeah.
Just the organising of your time, remembering what you've said to who, the sharing of those emotions that really, isn't possible to share between two people effectively. I can accept that you might not necessarily be in love with the same person for your entire life, and that you might fall out of love with somebody and in love with somebody else. That is fine. But the idea that two on the go at once is anything that men should be aspiring to or realistically do, I'm sure there are exceptions. Obviously, there are people out there that think, yeah, fantastic, this is exactly what we want. We all know those people. But for me, as a man speaking on behalf of men, no thank you very much. Does it sound like I'm protesting too much? Does it sound like I'm trying to cover up an affair?
Maybe.
Because I'm not having an affair. So yeah, that entire last bit that I just did there, that was just for my girlfriend's benefit.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that really. But Phoebe, oh, I wouldn't say no, would you?
Well, Phoebe would be hard to resist. And with me, I would have left Yvonne right at the beginning.
There's an easy out.
I would have said, told the truth. I said, I've met somewhere else. I'm sorry. This isn't working for me. I'm really unhappy. And you scare me a little bit. So I found another woman. And then that would be the end of it. I wouldn't, if she really wanted to know, I'd say, if she's in the 40s, if it makes you feel any better, if you want to think I'm a psychopath, that's fine. Either way, I'm going to walk down the street and I'll never come back.
Yvonne would say, what has she got that I haven't got? That's the natural question. That's what will follow.
She thinks I'm a spy.
She's more appreciative of Aero than you ever are.
I bet she loves kidneys. She's grateful for them, unlike you. I'm grateful for the kidneys. So bye.
That option was there. Of course, we're glad that Gary doesn't take that option, but to suggest that in some way that this is the audience living vicariously through Gary, for me at least, couldn't be further from the truth. Yeah. I'm watching it through a haze of cringe of, just don't do it, Gary. Just stop it. Pull yourself together. React better. This is not wish fulfillment for me.
No.
And again, Ron uses some other terms that are just a bit creepy. He suggests that she's servicing Phoebe.
Yeah, that was a bit weird.
That's a bit grotty. But I wasn't particularly offended by it, because that gave Gary a chance to come back and say that he isn't servicing her, that he's in love with her.
Yeah.
So you're talking about the woman I love. Well, one of the women that I love. So it is made out to be something nicer. Ron suggests that Phoebe is probably panting for it.
Does say some weird stuff this episode.
But Ron's got a ploy of his own. He wants Gary to go back to 1940 and buy him some shares.
Was it the radio company?
Eurotronic PLC.
Is that a real one?
Nope.
Oh.
So here, take these 250 notes.
Fraud is what they're saying. They're going to do some fraud.
They're going to do some actual criminality, yes. This is the last episode in the series, and what we've decided is that between series of Goodnight Sweetcast, we're going to take a small sabbatical.
Recharge. Reflect.
Think about what we've done.
Think about what we're doing with our lives.
And come up with some good ideas for how to keep the show and the podcast interesting and not become just a turgid retelling of the story of Goodnight Sweetheart every week. Because that might get a bit dull.
Some people will probably like that.
I'm sure they will, and we're going to like that. And in essence, that is what we're going to be doing every week. Mm. But we want to add other elements to keep it interesting. Things like getting people to send us pictures of themselves in the 1990s. How's that going?
No.
It's
just not happened.
I thought people would be well up for that.
So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to start stealing them. Like the guy in the last episode stole the photo albums. I'm going to do that.
You're going to break into people's houses.
Steal their photographs from the 90s.
But only the ones from the 90s. You're going to leave the albums there and just take the odd picture out, just the prize ones. Send us some pictures of you in the 90s. How difficult a request is that? That's all we're asking. We don't want money. I mean, send us money, but just send us a picture of you in the 90s.
Not money from a different time, though.
Don't want any white fivers.
I don't like the new fivers, though, so maybe it'll be better.
Why don't you like the new fivers?
This is one of those things that happens. I don't know if it's just in this country or if it's every country, where whenever anything changes ever so slightly, there's a sudden uproar of people going, I hate it. I like how it was yesterday. Like when Facebook changes the location of a button. It's awful. It's the worst. I can't live like this. And then within a week, I've forgotten what it's like before. What did the old ones look like? What, the ones we had 2 weeks ago? Yeah. Are you so angry about it? You signed a petition?
I do remember people being indignant when the new 5P came out in like 1990. And it's so tiny, I will lose them. How am I not going to lose this coin? Think of the old people. They've got to pick them up with their little old fingers.
Exactly. Forgotten about. In a week.
Gary kind of goes along with this plot of taking the money, or at least he takes the money off of him. We're not entirely sure if he's going to go along with it or not, because he does feel like maybe he'll be messing with time. So he's got a conscience when it suits him.
Yeah.
Ron points out that he's not being asked to assassinate Churchill. Oh, good. I'm glad. What, were you worried that Ron might ask you to do that? Do you think that's what he's building up to? This week, I'm buying some shares so that you can buy a new BMW. Next week, I'll get you to assassinate Churchill.
That's how you do it. That is how you groom your assassin.
Everyone always says, if you can go back in time, what would you do? Oh, assassinate Hitler. Can't be that easy. Surely the people that were already there already wanted to assassinate Hitler. What piece of knowledge are you going to take back with you to 1940 that will allow you to assassinate Hitler where they couldn't? You've got a time machine. You decide you want to use that to assassinate Hitler. Those two facts aren't related. That doesn't make you an assassin or in any way capable of killing Hitler. Even if you want to assassinate baby Hitler, which frankly I'm not okay with. I mean, you could find him.
You've got to actually murder a baby.
You've got to have the moral temerity. Is that a word? The moral fortitude or lack of moral fortitude required to let you strangle a baby. Mm. We're back to the blue room.
Oh, yeah, he's packing up his stuff, isn't he?
All of Gary's plop.
All his plops are on the table. And then he picks up a cassette that just says 1940, and sits on the end of his little coffee table.
Which, to be fair, looks a lot more comfortable than the sofa.
The sofa belongs outside.
In the commentary, Gran and Marx say they allow themselves one significant coincidence per episode, which is a good rule for writing. You're allowed coincidences, you're just not allowed to lay coincidence on top of coincidence. That's when it becomes convoluted. And this week's coincidence is that he puts on the video and he learns that the king
and the queen,
they're going to be visiting a hospital just up the road, the self-same hospital that he was in just a week ago.
Okay.
Fortunate from a set design perspective, at least. And thinks, oh, I can use this to my advantage. He's always looking for an angle.
Mm-hmm.
Packing up his stuff, he tells Yvonne that he's going to a memorabilia fair in Runcorn, giving himself an excuse to get away for a couple of days. So he's already planning to be away for more than a day. So he's been barred from the pub, but he comes back anyway.
He doesn't care about the rules. And he's got important news, though.
That he knows where the king is going to be. He's just up the road. We're going to go and pretend to be doctors.
Well, first Red says, because he's obviously keen, says, we hope we're not committing any crimes to doing this. And Gary instantly turns around and says, we're just going to impersonate some doctors. So, yes, they are doing crime. That's exactly what they're doing. He's not the best policeman, because that went over his head, that bit of crime. And, in fact, he allows himself to become an accomplice by getting the outfits.
Nobody at any point did think that Reg was the best policeman, of course.
No, I didn't realise he was that bad, though.
Uncharacteristically for Gary, he's got this spot on. This is a nice gesture that he's making. This isn't just bringing back stockings and chocolate. There's a great deal more thought and understanding gone onto this particular gift than he normally manages to make.
He realised this is something that Phoebe would like. So he was, it was thoughtful. Ultimately, though, the thoughtfulness did involve crime. This bit with the Queen, I hated. It felt like a school play. I did not like it.
They were tapping into a genuine disparity between the two periods, which was the love for the royal family was so absolute in the 1940s, for God knows what reason.
Yeah.
But it was real, and it is authentic from that point of view, that they would have been enamoured by the royalty.
Yeah, I got that. It was just the way they all clubbed together like the gang. All the Avengers assemble, and there's the policeman, the old dad, you know, and they all get together and come up, hatch a scheme. It's not the Avengers, it's Scooby-Doo. That's what it reminded me of. Here we go. Yeah.
So they go to the hospital. Turns out...
No, they break into the hospital. They're not going in now. This isn't visiting. They infiltrate, disguise themselves from within, and approach the monarchy, like the queen, which that would probably get you hung. Hanged. It's hanged, isn't it? You get hanged for that.
You'd hope that there would be, particularly in wartime, some sort of awareness that it would be handy to sort of put the head of state on a bit of lockdown. Favourite fact from the audio commentary this week, the actor, who is very well cast as the king, doesn't actually have to say anything or do anything. No. Gran or Marx or Gran.
Whichever.
Who knows? No way of knowing. If we get to interview them for the podcast...
We'll get them to wear name badges.
Well, I think we'll have to. Mm. I don't think there's any way of telling them apart. Presumably they play that trick on people. If I was them, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it would be like the Parent Trap.
What they said was they found the guy who plays the king just in the BBC canteen holding a plate of chips, which is great. Maybe that will happen to me. One day I'll just be in the chip shop and someone will say, come here.
I want you.
Yeah, You know who you really look like? King. They're not going to say that, are they? What are they going to say about me?
Yeah, but maybe a king. But
I'm like making a Jeremy Beadle biopic.
not like a king now. King from the really old times. Like where you'd have a sword. But you wouldn't be a popular one.
No. They get to meet the royal family. And Phoebe just does a faint.
Oh, this is another reason why I didn't like this scene.
There's something a bit Amdrammy about that. It's demeaning to Phoebe's character, who's been presented as a headstrong, intelligent, capable woman. And yeah, she really likes the king, but to just make the joke be she has a faint. I'd have liked a gag, and I feel like Reg would have been in a prime position to deliver a gag there. You've gone to the trouble of making sure that Reg is present. Give him a gag. Give us an out with that's got a bit more going on.
If it was me, because he's Reg and he's funny, I would get him to accidentally like knock over the king or something, and then the end of the episode would just be him being slowly walked to the gallows.
Hush.
And then a silent credits. That's me. I'm not a comedy writer like Mark Sungren.
When we cut to the pub next, though, Phoebe's very pleased indeed.
She's got all butterflies. She's got,
which is the mark of a good gift. The good gift was given. It made her happy. Well done.
So he did good on his supposed last time. But he's not finished.
He's not finished because he's just laying down the groundwork, isn't he? That's all it really was. And what he's really got planned is he's got this big wedge of white fivers. What's he going to do with them? Well, he could buy some shares, but alternatively, there's another level of criminality gone here because he's effectively just stolen that money from Ron. That money that Ron has specifically given him to buy shares with is saying, no, I'll tell you what, I'll use it to take Phoebe to the Savoy instead. Yeah. So again, the idea of taking Phoebe to the Savoy, that is another thoughtful gift. It is something that she definitely wants and that she's very happy with the idea of.
Yeah.
Reg is quite happy with the idea of it as well, but it's not for him, Reg. Eric accuses him of having ulterior motives, which he does. Again, Eric, you're not wrong. You're absolutely right. You're doing the right thing here. You are understandably annoyed at your married daughter having a suitor.
When you look at the timeline from these first six episodes, he's taken her out on a few dates now, been on little strolls with her. She's lied about them just remaining friends. Pretty much in the same episode, she decided that they couldn't do that. They've had lots of conversations about how they're planning to work this out. Phoebe's asked to move in with him. So this is proper affair stuff. And her dad knows this now. He's just really annoyed and a bit disappointed that Phoebe is entertaining this.
Gary wants to explain that there's a reason for doing this. It's not just to get his leg over, even though it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using that phrase now as if it's a phrase that I use. It's not. I'm only saying get his leg over because I would never say it outside of this room, and I would never have said it inside this room if it wasn't a phrase that Gary himself had used. Or was it Ron? I forget. But either way, it's been introduced to my lexicon now when discussing Goodnight Sweetheart. It is not how I would usually refer to the beautiful art of making love.
I think you should maybe stick to get your leg over.
Maybe I should. So he comes clean. Well, I say comes clean. That's not a phrase that you can use anywhere around Gary Sparrow. No. He concocts another lie, which is to say that he is going back to America and this is him saying goodbye, which Eric's somewhat pleased about.
Yeah.
Although he originally assumes that he's going to be joining up for the war effort. Gary could easily have made that lie, could have made himself seem a little bit more heroic. Not a heroic chap.
No.
Not happened. No, he's going to Hollywood to go and write West Side Story. Somebody has to.
Yep.
I mean, he could just let history take its course.
No, he'd rather change it.
He's leaving. He's not coming back. Straight to the Savoy. Both Gary and Phoebe looking lovely. He's scrubbed up nice here, given that he's wearing Reg's suit. It is a genuinely fantastic set that they've put together, given that this is for two fairly short throwaway scenes in a BBC sitcom about time travel. Mm. It really felt authentic and grandiose and very well done. Nice little technical detail, which I have no doubt is a fact, because we've established already that Grandma Marks did a lot of research about the period, and that is that when the air raid starts, the Maitre D, do you suppose he would go by the name Maitre D?
Sounds right, doesn't it?
It does, but I don't know enough about highfalutin eateries to know if that's the correct term. But the head waiter fella says that they're 70 foot below ground and it's the safest place in London when an air raid was on. That sounds as if that's probably true, isn't it? I think we might have actually learnt a real fact there. They get their starter, some soup in silver bowls. I don't think I'd like to eat out of a silver bowl. I feel like there'd be a clatter. It doesn't seem like a nice way of eating soup. Might probably refer to it as a bisque rather than a soup. Chowder. That's just a soup as well. Stop giving the soup so many names.
Just call it food water.
He's not interested in the food, though, is he? He's not interested in the food.
All eyes are on Phoebe.
And he goes off to speak to the maitre d'. I don't know if I'm using that term completely incorrectly. I probably am. Feel free to correct me.
Yeah, they will.
In much the same way as somebody on Twitter did correct me on the thing that I'm about to do now, he bribes the maitre d' for a room. There was some more bribery went on a few episodes ago via the currency of banana. I made the error of saying that Gary blackmailed. No, it wasn't with a banana. It was when Gary was trying to find out where Phoebe had gone. Mm-hmm. I said that he blackmailed Eric into giving the information, but he didn't. It wasn't blackmail. Him. It was bribery. I made a mistake.
You go, well, we can treat this as your apology.
I love the fact that our listeners wouldn't let me get away with that little slip. It was just a little mistake, but I'm sorry.
Well,
nobody's more sorry than I am.
That's how you do it. Get used to these.
Yeah, I think you might be right. So, yeah, I apologise in advance for using the term maitre d' incorrectly. I've never been to the Savoy. He bribes the maitre d' with some cold hard cash. You know, some dairy milk's not going to cut the mustard this time.
It's and he
cold hard forged cash.
In his poshest accent.
He puts on a voice, doesn't he?
And I have a theory.
Go on.
I think all the time Nicholas Lentez is playing Gary Sparrow, I think all that's put on. I think when Nicholas Lentez is at home, he speaks like that. Because he does it in such a way that it's quite convincing that even the little tone and the little way he uses his words, it sounds like this is natural to him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably just his acting chops. But I believe that is what he's like.
Like Doc Cotton. June Brown.
June Brown.
When you hear June Brown when she's not being Doc Cotton and she's got this crystal cut glass, beautiful, very upper crusty posh voice, and that the whole rest of the time she's just putting it on. They do establish in later episodes of Goodnight Sweetheart, and I don't think that this counts as a spoiler, that Gary Sparrow is from Lincoln. Have they chosen Lincoln because that's where Lyndhurst is from?
Lyndhurst is born and grew up in Emsworth, Hampshire.
In his poshest, most clipped voice, he bribes the maitre d' for a room. The maitre d' knows what's going on. He's pretending that that's his wife, pretending that they're going to be going back to Kensington. He lets the accent slip at one point. Quite funny. The maitre d's got his cash. He's happy. He drops to go and acquire some nightwear.
Lingerie.
Night attire, as they call it, because they don't want to make the journey back to Kensington in the air raid. Phoebe is genuinely concerned about going home in the air raid, so again, he is kind of doing a nice thing for her. Even if there wasn't an air raid on, I don't think that she'd need that much convincing to spend the night. She's not doing this against her wishes, and the parts of Gary Sparrow's character that she's becoming attracted to are the character traits that he has. He's not fabricated an entire lie about everything that he is. Just all the detail around that character. There was a contender for Joke of the Week coming up next.
The close contender. It was all right. It was a good one.
It was strong. Mm-hmm. Didn't get the biggest reaction from the audience. For a nicely worded and very well delivered joke, I thought that this deserved a slightly bigger laugh.
Gary, where have you been? Your soup's getting cold.
I was asking the head waiter if they had a sweep.
Well, you're getting ahead of yourself.
Sorry?
Oh, Mina, I might not have any room for a sweet after my dark.
It serves a double purpose in you can see Gary's reaction of being a bit disappointed that she's not on board with what he wants to do, but there's been a double meaning and a misunderstanding, and misunderstanding is the heart of all comedy.
Did you make that up?
I just made it up then. Good. Sounds like something people say though, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Where the last episode went wrong is that it didn't snap back and forth well enough between the 90s and the 40s. And this episode did a much better job of that, of interlocking the two time frames and not letting it go stale. There's two, you know, not short scenes at the Savoy that they could have easily ended up running in together, but the fact that they don't makes everything a bit punchier, and that's what was really lacking from last week's episode. So now we punch back to the printers, which is a really nicely constructed scene and gives Ron a chance to really shine. A lot happens in this scene, really. Ron is looking at, I didn't catch what type of car it was. I don't know enough about cars. Some glossy manual, probably BMWs.
Yeah. He was sitting there thinking about all the things he can do with his new money he's going to get, doing it as we all do when we read any sort of magazine and we're looking to buy something, potentially a car, where you look at it and then make the noise that makes. You go brum brum brum. Just imagining yourself in it. Oh, it's going to be like brum brum brum. Just like whenever you're looking at a travel brochure, you have to go wow, going on a plane. That's what we all do.
He notices Yvonne appearing through the window, and his immediate action upon seeing Yvonne arriving is to take down the page 3 poster. So we get a look at the page 3 girl. There's some boobs.
Yes, there are.
They are the only boobs to appear in the entirety of Goodnight Sweethearts. Exposed boobs, obviously. Which is well, no. I'm pointing this out as a historical comment.
I agree, and I don't understand what you're saying. But out of context, this podcast all of a sudden sounds like one of those things you find on the internet where someone's went through every scene in every film and found all the bits that got boobs in.
You can stop listening now. That's the end of the boobs. I'm sorry. The point I'm trying to make, which I perhaps I'm not doing the best job of doing, is that not only because it would not be de rigueur to put a page 3 mm-hmm. poster on the wall at a workplace anymore, thankfully, but even if it was, you would not show that. It's not because of an additional prudishness. It's kind of like what we were talking about last week of the giggly nature of talking about sex, that mm-hmm. they were getting away with talking about sex and being kind of unapologetic about that and not having to be euphemistic in the way they used to be. At this stage, it wouldn't have been okay to do a carry-on type joke of somebody's boobs coming out.
Boing.
That wouldn't be okay, but acknowledging the existence of boobs, we can just do it nonchalantly and drop it in the background and that's fine. That's gone away again now because you know what? No, it isn't. It's creepy and weird. Stop it. So it jarred as something that would not happen now. Rather than this being the mm-hmm. boob watch section of the show, that's not my intent.
Okay, good. Well, yeah, to make it, you know, to not look creepy, piss it away and everything. But what he does next is equally creepy because he immediately roleplays as a detective.
His way of dealing with the arrival of Yvonne is to drop into character as a Philip Marlowe-esque film noir self-narrating detective.
Black and white, smoky room.
He's got a pencil in his mouth that might be a cigar.
You know what's funny there? You compared it to Philip Marlowe. My genuine thought when I was thinking of what this was about, it was about Bob Hoskins and Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Which was based on the same thing.
Yep.
But it's just that our fields of reference are slightly different. So he plays out this act about Yvonne entering his office.
Or
Jessica Rabbit, yes. Or Marlene Dietrich. No, not Marlene Dietrich. Lauren Bacall, that's who I meant. Yvonne starts talking about wanting to understand Gary better.
They are best friends, so who better to know what's going on? To maybe find out if she can get a bit more knowledge about what's going on in Gary's head.
She's examining self-doubt as well. She's thinking, am I being too harsh? She's being introspective. She's looking at all angles, thinking, have I been unkind about him? Stealing our money. That's what he's done. He's spent a load of money without telling her from their collective funds. That's a dishonesty. Has she been too harsh? No, I don't think so. Has he actually been having an affair? Yes, he has. Has he been lying and deceiving? She's been entirely in the right and she's done nothing wrong. She had a dance with a professor, maybe a bit closer than you might have liked to have seen, but she's done nothing wrong. And so, yeah, she's got this doubt and you've got to feel a little bit sorry for her at this point. The way that she phrases it to Ron is ambiguous and confusing. She uses the phrase, I've got wants and needs. And it's all very suggestive and very easy to misinterpret.
And you can see behind his eyes, the cogs are wearing.
And what he's thinking is, she's coming on to me. She's the thing.
Uh-oh.
I'm not sure about this. I don't know what's happening.
He stands up and immediately declares his loyalty to Gary.
He says, in no uncertain terms, no, I don't want any of this.
What would you say I need?
Hold your horses, Yvonne. Gary's my mate. I mean, I know he can be a bit of a plank sometime, but that's no reason why you and I should embark on some sensual adventure, which once our immediate physical lusts have been slaked, will leave us spiritually lessened and emotionally empty.
What?
I mean, I'm flattered.
You'll be flattened in a minute.
There's already been the suggestion, more so from Gran and Marx's commentary than from the actual show itself, that Ron's got a bit of a thing for Yvonne.
Seems like in that moment he worked out that even though he had maybe fancied Yvonne a bit, he wouldn't go down the same road as Gary.
It would actually be much more justifiable for Ron to have an affair with Yvonne than it is for Gary to have an affair with Phoebe, because Ron knows that she's right that Gary is a complete shitbag and that he's completely cheating on her. So under those terms of engagement, surely fair enough. It's not really doing anything wrong. No. But he stands by Gary and he says, no, I don't want to do this. And the fact that he's got a wife of his own, let's not forget.
Oh, yeah.
So he's thinking all of this and he's saying no. To which Yvonne gets really cross at having even suggested such a thing.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, pretty much. How could you possibly think that or go there? But he didn't do anything wrong. There is literally nothing better he could have done in that circumstance. Even if he'd have said nothing and just carried on listening, thinking maybe she's coming on to me, maybe she's not, that's still worse than laying down the law and saying nothing's going to happen between us.
Mm.
What did Yvonne want?
She said she'd rather sleep with Sid Vicious. So she's saying, you know what? I'd actually rather have sex with a corpse.
He didn't misread this come on by putting his hand on her thigh or anything disgusting like that. He was the perfect gentleman. And yet she then goes to a place where she would never have sex with him and put it out. That's just cruel. That's not a nice thing to do. That's meaner than anything she's ever done to Gary. I didn't like her speech generally, other than the unclarity of it, which was obviously designed to confuse Ron. But even before we got to that point, there was a thing that she said, which I hope storytelling has moved away from a little bit, and I hope that public opinion is moving away from a little bit, because it makes no bloody sense. And that is this suggestion that there is an innate and completely impossible to understand difference between the workings of the minds of men and the workings of the minds of women. This idea that we're two different species, that we can't possibly have similar motives or ways of looking at the world. No, shut up. Use some insight and knowledge and communication and work it out for yourself, because you know what? You're actually members of the same species and your capabilities should lie in being able to interpret one another, even if Gary is a bit of a dickhead. I don't like it when people go to, oh, that's men for you. Oh, typical bloody woman. It's that. I don't like it. I don't like this suggestion that there are two pigeonholable groups of gender and that's the division between people.
Do you know what people love, though? Pigeonholes.
They bloody love them, don't they? They do enjoy a pigeonhole.
They love it. When you have something, you got to put it in a box.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
Everybody likes filing.
You need to be able to distribute mail in a staff room situation. So in some cases, pigeonholes are useful.
Yeah.
But when you're simmering down the essence of the human condition, probably best to avoid them. Or have more than two. Maybe that's what I'm saying. Maybe pigeonholes are okay, but you need more than two of them.
All right, have we solved that one?
I think that's that solved. So everybody listening to this podcast now understands that and has definitely taken on my way of thinking. Yvonne leaves none the wiser about the machinations of the mystery that is Gary Sparrow, even though he's not a very complicated man. It's time for Joke of the Week. This week's joke is brilliant because it's completely in every possible way unrelated to any of the rest of the events of the show. As the last episode of the series, they cram quite a lot of story into here. There's a lot going on. They still manage to find time to leave this gem in, though. Joke of the
Week. Nostradamus Printing, we anticipate your needs.
And what's criminal about it barely gets a laugh.
Because it takes a couple of seconds.
It makes a reference that maybe not everyone will get, but it's a pretty broad reference.
You think so?
Brings together the sensible and the silly. It's just a great little gag. And I'm glad that they found time for it. And it's one of those gags that you can imagine that the process of writing it would have been really rewarding. Because it wouldn't have come out of examination of the plot. It just would have been, oh, this is funny, let's stick this in.
Agreed.
The phone call that Ron was actually answering there was from a car salesman, and he's just bought a car for £80,000.
Do you know Gary?
I would definitely wait and presume that he's actually spending all of that money on bribing maitre d's. Or maitres d?
Who knows?
£80,000 on a car. But and in 1993, that would have bought four houses comfortably. Well, certainly in Kettering, maybe not in Cricklewood. That's a staggering amount of money to spend on a shit car. Back to the Savoy. By breaking up a scene like this, I don't want to pretend that I'm in any way qualified to offer any sort of a writing or directing masterclass, because really I'm not. I've only ever made podcasts. I did study screenwriting at university,
and
but that was a long time ago.
Didn't you direct Schindler's List?
No, I didn't.
Did you not?
No, you're thinking of Steven Spielberg.
Oh, okay.
It's an easy mistake to make. We do both have a beard. So I'm not qualified to say this, but that doesn't stop me from having an opinion. What you benefit from breaking up a scene like this and showing it in interludes rather than in one long stream of consciousness like we got in the hospital last week is you get the feeling as a viewer that you're seeing the best bits and the important bits. And so you're just zoning in for the high points and that what you're seeing has got some more importance to it as a result. Gary's recounting the plot of West Side Story because that's what he's off to America to do. Mm-hmm. He's got the negligee from... Is it a negligee? Would you describe it as a negligee? No, it's a bit too classy to be a negligee.
I wouldn't know.
But the nightie is not the right term, is it? Slip?
They did refer to it as lingerie.
Yes, it definitely comes under the family of lingerie, but that doesn't seem specific enough. Oh, God. There's a limit to how many things I can be an expert on, and it would appear that naming undergarments may be my limit. If you haven't seen the episode and you're relying purely on our commentary to tell you all about the details of Goodnight, Sweetheart, I'm afraid I can't adequately sum up what item of underwear this was. So I've written on my notes, offers upstairs. It's a bit classier than that.
Yeah. Don't go upstairs.
He doesn't just nudge you in the ribs and
just
nod upwards. But he explains that he's got a suite, explains what a suite is. She remarks, that's a house, when being told that it's got extra rooms. I thought that line was really well delivered. There was something about that line that I really liked.
Yeah,
she's very good. She is very good. There is no question that she is very much on board with this idea, and not in a one-night stand sort of way, even though that's effectively what it is. She feels like this would be an appropriate thing for them to potentially do. Whether Gary's intentions are that noble or not, I'm really not certain. He's definitely gotten a lot of affection. He did tell Ron that he's in love with her.
It is bad, and he does have an ulterior motive, but he's justifying it to himself. He's trying to make it so he's not that bad. He's doing it because it's an uncontrollable feelings that he's got for Phoebe. I'm not entirely convinced they're there yet, but he's convinced himself that they're there yet, so everything's fine.
And it's been like that from day one, because let's not forget, this isn't a conscious decision that he's made through evaluating all of the circumstances. Phoebe was literally the first person that he laid his eyes on when he walked through that time tunnel. Yeah, you can put a bit of fatalism in that and say, well, that was just meant to be. They were destined to be together. Or you could just read, he's going to make this up about whoever he sees.
Well, they're definitely not destined to be together because they were different periods of time. Judging by the way the universe is built, they are definitely not destined to be together.
Designed specifically to prevent them from having a meaningful relationship.
If you do have theories about a higher power, it's went out of his way to ensure that these two people don't meet.
And then they ruin it. If ever there was a need for a line to be edited out, it's this line just here.
Fancy a cup of coffee and all sweet.
You must be joking.
Oh, I just thought.
I don't like coffee. Cup of tea now.
It's a bit of a dick move on her part. We've established that she wants to do this. We've established that he wants to do this. As opposed to the sweet thing where she innocently made a mistake, this time she's deliberately tried to mislead him and send him in the wrong direction. That's not as nice. Getting a very similar reaction that we had earlier from the misunderstanding from the sweet and sweet, in he gets a bit deflated and thinks, oh, I thought that we were doing well, but actually we're not. Only this time it's done with a really bad joke and it doesn't fit the mood of the scene, and it would have taken nothing to cut it. It would have been much sweeter if she'd have said, because effectively she's saying yes when she says no, but I'll have tea. It would have been sweeter and tenderer if she'd have just said yes, I'd like that. And they could have let that hang for a minute before Eric arrives, because that's what happens next. We already know that they're not going to make it up to that sweet. That decision was already made. Her showing willing and a bit of sweetness there would have been nicer. Because here comes Eric. I'm really pleased that this is his final scene, because the Eric that we see here is the best Eric. And if they brought this out of him more, he'd have been a much stronger character and we could have done more with him. He blusters into the Savoy dining room.
That's a good way to describe him. He's a very blustery man.
When he's at his blusteriest, that's when he's at his best.
Excuse me, sir, do you have a reservation?
I was in both battles of the Somme. I don't have to reserve.
Even spend a quiet evening with the brain without...
You've had a telegram. I thought you'd want to see it straight off.
I can't.
can't open it.
If he played on that more, if he was more haughty and entitled and stronger, and maybe even firmer with Gary and properly put his foot down, because he never quite gets to go that far, if he became more of a presence like that, the character may have survived longer. Yeah. So we really saw the absolute best of Eric for his last scene here. He clearly cares enormously for his daughter and the fact, and he is obviously and effectively very concerned about the fact that he's delivering this telegram. He looks a little hurt when Phoebe asks Gary to open it instead of getting him to do it. When Gary then reads it out and says that he's been captured and he's a prisoner of war, Eric is really pleased about that. You get all the most interesting elements of his character in a less dismissed and sidelined way than you get in most of his appearance in the show, which unfortunately doomed the character.
Yeah, it is a shame.
And then he accompanies Phoebe off in a very caring, fatherly way. It's nice that you didn't get the feeling that he was dragging her off. That wouldn't have been the right mood to set. So I think that that little exchange there is really pitch perfect and ever so nicely done. And if it wasn't for the fact of the cup of coffee joke, that scene would have been pretty near perfect.
Or maybe one of the better ones in the whole series. First series.
There's a lot goes on there and a lot is conveyed with very few words as well. That certainly when she says goodbye and walks off, because they know at this point that he's going to America, he's not coming back, that decision has been made, and it would be difficult for him to go back on that. Not impossible, as we find out, but they are saying goodbye, and they are both very clearly upset by that, and it's nicely played. The final scene of the series, though, we're back in the blue room. Gary, still in his dinner jacket, returns from Runcorn.
Sad.
He's a bit dejected and a bit gloomy.
As you would be.
Yeah, absolutely. The sad things have happened.
Not just because he didn't get to do the whole thing with the suite, because he's not going to see Phoebe again. That's sad.
And we say this before, for all the bad things that Gary does, and for all we criticise him, he is not a bad person. He doesn't want Donald to die. He doesn't want bad things to happen. He doesn't want Yvonne to disappear. So he's come back from Runcorn. Runcorn gets a real thrashing in this episode. It's all right. I'm going to wait that long until 2 pints of a lager and a packet of crisps comes along.
So just
really save the reputation of Runcorn. He's still got this negligee. It's not a negligee. This...
pyjamas.
Please help us. Help us, people who've seen this episode. Tweet us and let us know what word you think we should use to describe this pink number. This gift that he bought for Phoebe, though, we can't let that get to waste. Mm. Got another wife. She'll do.
Do you want it?
Give it to her instead. And this is so Gary. This is so Gary with what happens next. He's been to this 1940s memorabilia sale in Runcorn. That's the story that he's going with. And so he makes up a story that he was told about this particular garment. Basically telling his own story, but in the third person. But that's fine. Except it's the story of an officer. So he's cast himself as an officer and was having a dalliance with the Phoebe character, but couldn't bring himself to be unfaithful because he'd got a wife. Well, that's not true. Gary was quite happy to bring himself to be unfaithful. He's just completely altered that story. He tells the part about the telegram being delivered, but then decides to take their marriage vow seriously because that's what people did back then. That's not a story of redemption and the right decision being made, but the clear implication is this is what I've decided to do too because of duty.
If I was Yvonne, I would think, oh, he's clearly having an affair. He's clearly been having an affair, and now he's come to his senses. And he's a stupid man, because he's pretty much just told me. Why is he wearing that suit? You've obviously been out somewhere where he's needed you to wear a suit. You've got this gift. I never get gifts that aren't kidneys. You've told me this story about this sad man, and now you've turned up as a sad man. I'll put all these pieces together. You dick.
Jaleesa is very taken by the whole thing, thinks it's all very romantic. And then we close the whole series down with Yvonne has put the tape on that he was watching earlier. And there's Gary in 1940 meeting the king. And end series. A lot gets done in the episode. I think it does a really good job. And as much as Yvonne should know better, she doesn't. Mm. She does love Gary. We've been given enough reasons in the series for her to love Gary. I'm all right with it.
Yeah,
I'm on board.
Again, I said earlier on how I would end it with the execution of PC Deadman. Mm. Another way I would like to have ended it, if it was me, they're sitting down and he puts the VHS in, and the second Gary's face appears, the sky goes black, blood starts falling from the skies, and Gary goes to the window, opens the curtains and goes, it started. end.
Nice.
He's crushed time.
Yeah.
That's why they weren't dead. They shouldn't have been together. They chose not to.
Well, they still might. If we get a new series, maybe that's the denouement that they didn't quite get to realise the first time around, and that everybody would be happy if we can just get the ending we really wanted.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back in... We're having 2 weeks off, so we will be back in 3 weeks.
Yep.
We'll be back, hopefully, with some great ideas for things that we can do with Series 2. If you've got any suggestions, please let us know. Bye!
Goodnight Sweetcast is a Wikishuffle podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter at GNSCast, or find out more at goodnightsweetcast.com.